Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Coach's Corner on Blog Talk Radio. On this show, I interview life coaches, business coaches, and other coaches to discuss all aspects of coaching and business. We'll also take your questions, and you might have the opportunity for live coaching right on the show. I'm Coach Andrew Poritz with Ingenuity Coaching, myfuturecoach.com. I help people transitioning from corporate America to entrepreneurship. My mission is to inspire and challenge you to dream big dreams, and with my coaching, help you to manifest those dreams into reality. If you're listening live and you want to call in with a question, the call-in number is 646-929-2893. Again, that's 646-929-2893. You can also go to the site at blogtalkradio.com/coachandrew and join our chat room, and you can talk with other people listening, post questions in the room, and I'll check in from time to time. A couple of years ago, actually about a year ago, I walked into a New York coaching meeting group, and I met a fellow by the name of Craig Jennings, and I was very interested in his presentation, and I got to know Craig a little bit. And Craig is going to be on our show today. So Craig Jennings is a business coach, self-described as an entrepreneurial junkie. Craig also runs a successful New York coaching group for many years, and you can learn more about him on his blog at www.craigjennings.com. So Craig, are you with us?
I am with you. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Craig. Thanks very, very much for being on the show today.
Pleasure.
So tell me, so you have been on the coaching scene for quite some time.
Yeah, and it's really been it's been spectacular. I was trained by Thomas Leonard and Julia Stewart, who is his sort of chief trainer, and they were magnificent. And Leonard was breathtaking. And for some reason or other, it was really easy to do. And I haven't looked back. I've been a coach for 10 years. It gets better every year.
How did you wind up getting trained by the famous Thomas Leonard?
Well, I had a business. Actually, I had a training business in Manhattan, and I sold it for a bunch of money. And I was really happy about that. I was happy about the bunch of money. And then after a while, I got to looking around, looking at the walls, and trying to figure out what to do. And I decided I would have to have a new occupation. I couldn't go back in the other occupation because I had an agreement not to. And I decided that since I was old and had white hair, the only thing that I could take on that really made any sense was to be a coach. And so without any better sense than that, I set out to do that. And at that point, Thomas Leonard was starting Coachville. And I became a charter member, one of the first people that had joined Coachville, because he sounded like he made sense. And what I discovered over the 3 or 4 years that I worked with him before he died, he not only made sense, he had made every coach, every significant coaching organization up to then that point. He'd made Coach U and ICF, and he was the generator of coaching, and for that matter, still owns an awful lot of the ideas and the integrity of the business. And I was just lucky enough to be in at the start, and he inspired the hell out of me.
I have to tell you, I'm very jealous.
Mm. Yeah, well, luck plays. you're entitled to be jealous because it was really a wonderful place to be, and luck and opportunity.
Sure.
You know, that's the story.
Yeah, I didn't even know coaching was a career until maybe 5 years ago. I thought it was this thing only guys with white hair did.
There you go. There you go.
Wow, that's great. So you're a business coach, and what are the kinds of businesses that typically come your way?
Oh God, there are no kinds of businesses that typically come my way.
Okay.
There is. I answer that question a fair amount, and I've done a little research on it, and I don't think that I have ever worked. I don't think I have ever worked. Coached the same kind of business twice. OK, Okay, I've been coaching for 10 years, and several of my clients have been with me for a number of years. But there have been some that didn't stick around for a while, or were in for a short term and got done what they needed to get done and went on. I've never had any duplication, so it's always something different. I can't tell you why, but the issue has nothing to do with technical knowledge.
What about the size of the business? Are they typically small businesses, large businesses?
Yeah. My experience as an entrepreneur went up to about $2 million a year. And I, generally speaking, work with businesses that aren't much bigger than that. So, yeah, I don't. The Fortune 500 is safe from me.
Well, they don't know what they're missing.
Oh, God bless you. Bless. From your mouth to their ears.
So, Craig, what happens when people call you and ask about coaching?
Well, first of all, it's really exciting. I mean, I get really excited when people call and ask about coaching. And we give them what I call the handbrake test. And the handbrake, have you ever just driven a car with a handbrake on?
Mean like a Ford Model T?
Well, any car that has a handbrake.
Oh, the handbrake. Oh, okay, I was thinking of the old. You just had me going back in the past here for a second. You mean the brake, the parking brake?
The emergency brake.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, gotcha.
Well, there's a story about some guy who gets, a coach gets in a car with some guy, and he says, how do you like your new car? And he said, well, it's really nice. You know, it's got all these gadgets, and really nice, and it's pretty, and it's shiny. But it gets lousy gas mileage. You know, it's sluggish as hell, and it has a funny smell to it. And so then the coach says, oh, well, what's that big silver thing sticking right up between the seats? He said, well, the salesman told me when he gave me the car that everything was exactly the way it should be, so I don't know what it is, but we shouldn't move it. Okay, you're driving along, and you hear the squealing of the brakes and the smoking of the brakes and that sort of thing. And the coach says, well, what would happen if we – imagine what would happen if we could – lower that down. He said, well, you can't lower it down because there's a little button on top that locks it. Oh, okay. So what would happen if you push the little button down? Well, I don't know. And then the coach makes a deal with him. He said, now, what would happen if we push it down and we could pull it right back up? Would that be all right? And usually if you can get a yes at that point, then you have a coaching relationship. And what happens for me, is people call me, and they don't say, "Hey, I've got the handbrake on," but there's something not working in their business. And so the first thing we have is a conversation, usually a fairly short conversation at no cost, and we try to see whether there's a handbrake on. And after that, if we discover there's something we really want to tackle together, then we go on and tackle it. So that's how it starts.
That's a great analogy, the handbrake. I've never heard that one before.
I made it up.
Ah. So what are some of the mistakes that small businesses tend to make?
Well, there's a cluster of them. And I don't mean to sit in judgment of it, because what I want to promise you is that I have made and continue to make all the same mistakes again, the same mistakes as my clients do. And I've had a lot of experience with that. I'm really knowledgeable about that. Oh, I know just what that is. Do it all the time. But the first thing is when you lose your vision.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when you started a business, you had this picture of what you were going to do. The star in the east. You're going to follow the star in the east. Mm-hmm. It came to the Christ child, okay? And sometimes a week or a month or 6 months or a year or 2 years later, you can't tell which star it is. And you're tired. And you think, maybe it's a good time to just sit down and rest. You know, and whatever the picture was that I was excited about, I'm not excited about it anymore. That's a potentially terminal mistake in a business, because the entrepreneur has to continue to renew his vision. It's a tricky responsibility, but he not only has to renew his vision, but he has to communicate his vision to other people, whether the people that work with him or whether his friends or his wife or whatever. He has to keep expressing his vision and developing it. If he doesn't, he loses the charge that keeps him in action. He loses the possibility of being incredibly successful. He takes on, if he loses his vision, he takes on the possibility of just going back and being an employee somewhere, even if he's just an employee for himself.
Got it.
Scary.
Yeah, very scary.
Can I give you a couple more?
I would love to hear some more.
Okay, well, there's a conflict between vision and action that's really important. And vision is the ability to get the big picture, and action is to do the work.
Right.
And usually when people call me, they have an action problem. It's not too often they have a vision problem. It takes a little longer to figure out when it's a vision problem. Okay? But there's a wonderful Japanese proverb. Check this out. And the Japanese proverb says, vision without action is a daydream. Action without vision is a nightmare.
Oh, that's great.
So you can imagine that if you or I were working in our own business and we had this great vision, but we didn't do anything about it, okay, it's a daydream, you know. And
right.
Actually, if we're doing a lot of action, what's more common, however, for an entrepreneur is he was such a hard worker when he was an employee that nowadays his own business, he is just busting his buns and he's working 24/7, but he's doing the action without any vision. And when that comes up, either one of those comes up, then the entrepreneur is in a lot of trouble because he's in incipient burnout. Okay?
So the latter one sounded like the chicken without the head.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael Gerber talks about it in his wonderful book, The E-Myth Revisited, which he has reprinted about 400 times. As a matter of fact, he was such a great entrepreneur that he sold the whole company that he built, hired a president. He sold shares in his company, hired a president, and went off and did something else. Now that's entrepreneurship. Because another one of the traps is to create a business that that keeps you busy 24/7. Because if it keeps you, if you're making a business, your ultimate intention should be to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And Gerber came out and spoke at a TAB group that I'm a part of a couple of years ago, and we had about 300 people in the room, and they were all pillars of the community, three-piece suits and all that good stuff. And he had about 30% of them wanted to cut his throat. Because he said, look, how many people here work at least 60 hours a week? And the hands went up. He said, you don't have a business. You just bought yourself a job.
Mm-hmm.
Supposing you were trying to sell your business to someone. First of all, you tell them what your bottom line is. Secondly, you tell them what your gross profit is every month. And then you tell them, in order to do this, you have to work 60 to 70 hours a week to do it. How many people do you think you could sell it to? And people went into shock. And I'm not saying entrepreneurs need to be lazy, but they certainly need to understand that we fundamentally don't place enough value on our own time. I guess that's really what I want to get out with that one. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. There's another issue that comes up a lot.
Sure.
And we call it lack of financial management, and that's really pejorative. But the way the phenomenon comes up is I'm coaching three guys right now who do not want to know their bottom line.
Why?
Because they have a business that supports them doing what they do. They make money. It's a profitable business. And one guy said, well, I'm not sure how well my business is doing, but I wanted to buy a new piano. And he said, I almost didn't want to tell you that, because they have a piano and it's fine. But they have one in the store that's really nice and I got a great deal on it. It only cost me $7,000. So I put it on my American Express charge card and charge it to the business. Now, guess what he's asked me to do? Help him find out what his bottom line is in the business. Guess what he doesn't want to know?
His bottom line.
If he wanted to know his bottom line, he wouldn't be buying new pianos to replace old pianos that are perfectly fine. Well, he's in it for the pleasure of being an owner, the pleasure and freedom of being an owner, and knowing the numbers he sees as a retreat from freedom. Let me just take that a step further, because it's really sad. If he could learn the numbers and understand the numbers, he is such a talent, he is so gifted, that he could run in 6 to 9 months, his business could be producing double the income it is right now. But he'd have to get stuck into it, and he'd have to watch his bottom line. And so far, that's his handbrake. Does that make sense?
Sure. So what do you do with a guy like that? How do you get him to release that handbrake?
You dare him. Or you challenge a coach. I think there are two answers to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What that takes at that point is coaching courage. That's where the coach has to be worth his salt, because that's when he's got to say to the client, "Are you sure you want me to continue coaching you?" Well, okay. Well, look what's going on here. You're doing A, B, and C. You say you want X, Y, and Z, but this is totally A, B, and C are totally inconsistent with X, Y, and Z. Would you like me to go over that again, sir? And of course, what the coach is saying is, if you piss him off, he's perfectly willing to keep paying you. You're like the $7,000 piano. You have somebody to talk to, somebody to say, okay, how is it going? Oh, yeah, how things are going? Oh, you made that decision, you did that, you're thinking about doing that, you're still thinking about doing that, you're still thinking about that. Okay, I mean, you can. That's a tit that you can suck at as long as you're a calf.
Sure.
Okay, and you have to grow up. So that's when the coach earns his money, and sometimes when he ends the relationship.
So you've been in the situation of firing a client?
Oh yeah. I've only fired one client, and he was untruthful. And I knew he was being untruthful, but it really didn't. I cut my clients a lot of slack, and so I thought, well, maybe da 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 da, and I referred him to a lawyer. He wanted to talk to a lawyer, and the lawyer called him out on it, and he said A, B, and C, and the lawyer said X, Y, and Z, and he said, no, I never said A, B, and C. The lawyer said, but you did. And I thought, oh fuck. And so I realized, and I was having a lot of difficulty with the client, and so I really wasn't as clear that he was lying until somebody else caught him in a lie in front of me. And then I said, oh, okay, goodbye. And then he said, I can't believe that you're ending the relationship here without the penalty clause for getting out early. And I said, well, it's my choice. And he never twigged, I said, you know, that's it. I didn't tell him I'm leaving you because I don't think you're an honest man. That I couldn't do.
What did you do?
I just said we're having difficulty. Let's not go forward. I could have been brassier, I suppose, as I think about it. But that was the only guy that ever fired. Every once in a while, I've had somebody who didn't like my version of reality, and that ended the relationship.
Mm.
But that's an important thing to happen, because sometimes it means the coach isn't right for the client.
Sure.
And your client has some responsibility in the matter. After all, he's paying. You know. So it's, every once in a while, it's up to us to put the bacon on the griddle and see whether it fries.
Well, now you just got me hungry. So.
Well, it's time for a snack, isn't it?
A little bacon snack.
What else can we talk about?
Well, I'd like to. You had mentioned to me you had some case histories of some.
There's one guy I'm really excited about. Oh, we'll call him Ralph. That's not his name.
Okay.
But Ralph was in the insurance business and the pension business, and he was at one time famous. He came into some real personal difficulties. I won't go into detail, but they were as nasty as you could imagine.
Okay, sure.
And he real hard times. And when I met him, he was sort of interested in getting his business going. But he really wasn't. And he was buying a little real estate and overhauling the real estate. I live in New York, and the real estate was in Vermont, so they had to drive up to Vermont over the weekend. And when he got back, he was tired, so he only worked 2 or 3 days a week. And I said, look, what do you really want to do here? And so we went out for dinner. And I asked him to fish or cut bait. And I said, look, if you fish, here's what's going to happen. You're going to take this business and you're going to pump it up from something that pays you $70,000 or $80,000 a year and lets you buy boats to something that's going to be worth $5 million and somebody's going to pay you that money or pay it in installments in 10 years from now. And you're going to get a tenth of that every year for the next 10 years and you're going to retire like a goddamn king.
And
that became his vision. So he built an exit strategy. And one of the mistakes is people that don't have an exit strategy, you know, an idea of what building the business is really for, which is for your own welfare, okay, but ultimately to sell. And so he's got this exit strategy, and we're looking at the golden goose, and he is kicking butt. My God, the man has just dropped it in gear. And I can't think of anything more exciting for a coach than when the client catches fire. So that's a wonderful story.
That's like your son just did something amazing.
That's a great analogy. It's absolutely true.
That's my boy.
Yeah. Right. And you can really be proud of the guy because what he took on was the end of old age.
What do you mean?
He was retiring.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was slowly pulling the gray hood over his face, if you will. He was telling stories that really weren't very truthful. He was reminiscing. He was ending his life. Or he was ending his life as he knew it. And he had new adventures like buying houses and renovating them and that sort of thing. But he knew that he was making an exit strategy for life that was not much of a strategy. Now he has an exit strategy that has an upward arc, and he is absolutely energized and thrilled. And we're inventing new things for him to do. I represent a tremendous value to him. That sounds like bragging, but I'm really thrilled about it. I represent a tremendous value to him because he can count on me to be excited with him as he makes this thing go. And we have this $10 million target, or $5 million, whatever,
sure.
In 8 years. And it's exciting, so.
And that gives, I would imagine it also gives you your own, as you're sort of part of that dream, it gives you something also to be shooting for.
Well, I have, there's a craft commercial component as well,
okay.
Which I'll share with you. I ask my clients for a success incentive, which is 4% of their net profit, okay, or their net profit increase. since we started to work. Now, the trick, this is really sneaky and tricky, because it sounds like it really benefits me. And the truth of the matter is, in the clients that I've worked with, by and large, that doesn't amount to a great deal of money. Okay, because it's the increase in the net profit.
Right.
But what it forces the client to do is to understand his own numbers. And that's worth rubies.
Sure.
Okay? And then if later on, if I'm making too much money, we renegotiate. You know, that happened once, and I said, well, it's okay. You know? Let's change it. I said, the reason I put this thing on for you was to get you to pay attention to the damn numbers. And he said, well, it really did change the way I looked at it. I said, okay, that's the game. So at any rate, that was a fun thing. I have another one. Do you have a minute for one?
Absolutely. We have 18 minutes left in our show.
Okay, great. Well, there's one. I'm really proud of one guy. I worked with him for about three and a half, four years. We'll call him Roger. And he was a rep. And he was working for this guy who was busting his chops. And he was a rep in the lawn and garden world. And he called on big stores.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really tough game. If you know people that work as self-employed independent reps,
right?
They have a car with 60 that gets 60 or 70,000 miles a year on it. They're on the road all the time. They're going from store to store, place to place, customer to customer, and they do what they can. And they work harder than almost any other entrepreneur I've ever seen. And this guy had been working for this one guy for 17 years. And the guy he was working for was really a tough dude. And so he called me one day and said, and we talked about coaching, and we had a conversation or two, and I said, have a look at my testimonials and see if I might be the right kind of guy. And we ultimately agreed, because what he wanted to do was to quit being the rep for this representative organization, create his own rep organization, and take the clients away from his boss. And the dumb in the background is that he was scared to death of his boss.
Mm.
So this took guts, balls, and all intestinal intrepidity, all kinds of whatever you can imagine. It took an enormous amount of courage and determination for him. And our original coaching sessions were we coached six times a month, which is very, very intensive. But he had all kinds of actions to take and a vision to build. And the vision was what his business would look like as a sole proprietor, and then how he would enlarge it. And I won't go too. We worked together for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
After and we worked for 4 or 5 months at a 6-time-a-month coaching session. Okay, and then he walked into his boss, and he told his boss that he was going to go out on his own. And his boss stood up and gave him a smile, put his hand out, shook his hand, and said, "Good luck." He was astounded. And every client that he had asked came with him. And the first year, he made $250,000.
Wow.
Yes! Yes! So those are the kinds of things that just really, really lift a coach. And they do pretty well for a client, too, I might add.
I would imagine so. And do you in person or over the phone or a combination?
Well, it depends. I mean, the one guy I spoke of was in Minnesota, so it was, you know, we never met. The other guy who's building an exit strategy lives on Long Island, and I see him every Thursday morning. So I have a client in Southern California and a client in Maui, and you know, people find me on the internet, and we get to work. So most of the time we do phone coaching. How about you? Is that what you do most of the time?
I would say almost entirely phone coaching. Every so often that comes up where somebody wants to meet, and if they're in New York, sure, why not?
There's some arguments about that. I'll share this with you. There are some arguments that suggest that phone coaching, in some respects, is more effective than face-to-face coaching. Okay? You may have read Blink.
I think I blinked and missed it.
I
have not read Blink.
It was by Malcolm Gladwell.
Okay.
Okay? And it's a story of... get everything that Gladwell has ever written and read it. He has three books out.
I'm writing that down.
Okay, he's spectacular. But what he points out is that sometimes you just want the information you need. And if you have more information than you need, it doesn't work for you, it works against you. And Blink is having a look at how you assimilate information, how you get enough information to make decisions. And there are some aspects of it where more information works counter to your intention. I've noticed a couple of times with people who I coach both face to face and by telephone that we are more businesslike when we're working by phone. Now it's much more enjoyable to work face to face. There's a lot of stimulus, the visual, the emotional that may not show. But at any rate, there's an excellent case at any rate, in my opinion, for telephone coaching.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would definitely have found that on the phone there's something. For me personally, I find that there are things that I can hear that I might miss because I might be distracted by something about the visual.
Yeah.
I might actually miss something. I have to be so much more attentive with my ears.
Yeah, and I think that's true, and you really have to focus. And I think that the focus, what a coach really needs to be able to do is to provide totally focused attention to what his client has to say. And it's only when you're really in that zone that you can really be with him. And it's only when you're really with him that it works right. I don't know. There's something a little undefined in that statement, perhaps. But anyway, you and I agree on that.
Did you happen to see the movie Ray, about Ray Charles?
Yeah.
Here's a guy who couldn't see, so everything he did was with his ears, and as a result, he was so finely tuned to sound that he could hear things that nobody even noticed were going on. I mean, like a bird fluttering or something crawling across the floor, he could hear it.
Yeah, that's true. When I went to school... When I went to college, I had a session in summer school, and there was a guy by the name of Ved Mehta, who became a writer for The New Yorker, and he was a blind Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very, very lucky because his parents had some money, and they sent, when he became blind, he had meningitis or something like that, they sent him to a school for the blind, because most of the time in India, if you're blind, they turn you to basket weaving.
Mm.
And if you're a basket weaver, you can't read Braille. So he was able to get an education, and he went to Harvard, for Christ's sake. Okay, and I was his guide all summer, and he taught me a lot about how much I don't see, including when we're walking down the street, and he had his hand on my arm, and there was a kid with a shoeshine box sitting by the side of the road, okay, or up against the building, and I'm chatting with him, and he's talking with me, and he trips right over the kid with the shoeshine box. And I was embarrassed and ashamed, and I said, "Oh, gee, I'm sorry, Ved, I didn't see him." And he giggled and he said, "Be sure as hell I didn't." So it is a special world. Actually, what he told me was how much sex he got. He said women love him because I can't see what they look like.
But he goes on at a lot of blind dates.
I'm
sorry, I couldn't. I went there.
It had not occurred to me until this moment. I wish I had an opportunity to put that to him. But yeah, he told me he was tremendously successful sexually, and he said, I think a lot of it is to do with the fact that I'm blind. And he said, maybe that's a certain amount of tactile superiority to a sighted person, but I think it's mainly that women can see that I can't see their defects.
Isn't that interesting?
So a certain blindness may be appropriate for us all. What do you think?
Oh, I every year I get a little closer to that.
You have a point there. Ouch.
So I wanted to hear about something that you had referred to as the Holy Grail.
Well, I mentioned vision and mission.
Yes.
But the Holy Grail is self-knowledge. And I invite all my clients to sup to drink at the Holy Grail. And they say, "Well, what do you mean?" And I said, "Well, the best thing that I could do for you, perhaps, or might be, to help you learn more about yourself." What do you suppose the general response to that is?
I have no idea.
Negative.
Oh.
No, I think I have a lot of self-knowledge. Maybe more than I'd like. Let's give that a pass and go on to something else.
Okay.
And the irony of it is that invariably, but when you get self-knowledge, and I use a whole series of psychological assessments. I'm going to make a recommendation, by the way, before we're done. A whole series of psychological assessments. You learn things about yourself that you did not know. And most of them are good. And for a business owner, he's got to know what he's good at. Okay? Now, the problem is, not only is that important, but he's got to know where he's good and where he's not. An example from my own book is I was really pissed off because I couldn't get my bookkeeping square. Okay, so I've been 3 days working with QuickBooks to get everything organized. And then I invited this friend of mine who was a QuickBook expert to have a look at it, and he looked at it and said, I said, and I did this. And I could sense a certain lack of enthusiasm in his voice. And finally he said, "Craig, you said, I think I can probably straighten it all out in about 10 or 15 hours. I was devastated. But it turns out that if you ask me to add up a column of numbers with a pencil and paper, the only way I would get you a decent result is to add it up three times and average the result. I have no skill with simple math. If it's complicated mathematical relationships, I'm terrific, or I'm okay. Okay, but simple math, I'm a klutz. Well, what I want to suggest to you is I didn't know that. Until I made this, I invested a tremendous amount of personal time and then had this friend come in and politely say, "You really did that, did you?" Had this friend come in and have a look at my work and say, "Well, you're a great guy, but you have a lousy bookkeeper." And so the business owner really has to find out what he's great at and do that. And get the hell out of all the other kinds of things in the business that he could do and probably has learned how to get by on because we entrepreneurs are very resourceful, but he isn't good at, okay? And do the things that he's great at. Does that make sense?
Absolutely it does.
Okay, so I'm going to – can I make a recommendation to whoever is listening, tunes in, or whatever?
Sure.
There's a book written by Clifton called – Now Discover Your Strength.
Now Discover Your Strength.
Your Strength. And it's by somebody in Clifton. I forget the other guy's name. Clifton was the guy who really generated what was called strength theory. And that's been printed and reprinted and reprinted. And there is a cheaper version, which I don't quite like quite so much, that was a reprise of that, an update of it, and that's smaller and cheaper, written by a fellow by the name of Rath, R-A-T-H, called StrengthsFinder 2.0. Now, here's the payoff.
Mm-hmm.
If you read these books, you will discover why the old wives' tales about doing it all yourself are bad, or why there's a notion, for example, that your greater opportunity for your greatest growth is in the area of your greatest deficiency. And the problem, of course, is in the area of your greatest deficiency, you have no skills. You have nothing to build on. The opportunity for your greatest growth is in the area where you're strongest.
Mm.
Okay? And
yep.
The entrepreneur needs to be unbalanced. He needs to go after the things that he's really strongest about. Now, if you read read either of these books, here's my coaching to your audience. Do not buy a used one. Because the real reason you're buying this is because there's an incredible assessment that comes in with it. And the assessment tells you how good you are at what. Or not just how good, but what tells you what your five greatest strengths are. Are you a strategic thinker? Are you responsible? Or are you a kind of person who takes care of others? Are you essentially a caregiver? Are you a wooer, a salesman? What kinds of mentalities do you have? And it'll give you your five greatest strengths. And if you have a look at what your five greatest strengths are and see how many of those are being used in your business, when I can get clients to take that assessment, the book costs $20, okay? And the assessment is free. Most of the assessments, Myers-Briggs and that sort of thing, cost $200 or $300.
Sure.
And my clients will go through that too, bless their little hearts, or the gutsy ones will. But Now Discover Your Strength is a wonderful way to get it started, or StrengthsFinder 2.0, by Tom Rath. A wonderful way. You can find them at Barnes & Noble, or you can find them all on Amazon. Just be careful not to buy a used one, because somebody will already have had the code.
Okay. I'll probably order that right after the show. So we only have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to hear, you had mentioned something to me earlier in our conversation about CEO time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's one of my hot buttons. CEO time is so critical, because entrepreneurs, the most powerful thing that an entrepreneur has is his time. Absolutely. I mean, your fundamental resource, we'll go beyond your entrepreneur. You and your life, Andrew, and my life are the only things we own. The argument may be we don't have enough time, but in point of fact, you and I have all the time we have. We have all the time there is, until suddenly you stop having any at all. But the entrepreneur who spends most of his time doing what we'll call chief employee work is most of us. Most entrepreneurs spend most of their time doing work that's worth $15 an hour. And then they spend a little time doing manager work where they're asking somebody else to do something, and they feel a little guilty about that. And then they spend, very rarely do they spend time learning something new or putting their feet up and thinking about what they might do next.
Wow.
Okay? I ask people to do this, and I have a blog, craigjennings.com/blog, where there's a spreadsheet there, and it adds up the numbers. And if you give it a 1, 4, 5, how many hours do you spend a day? Let's say you spend 10. You spend 1 hour of CEO time, 4 hours on manager time, 5 hours on chief employee time.
By the way, Craig, I'm sorry to have to break off, but we have literally 15 seconds left.
I'm sorry.
And I know I wish we had waited for this long for this, but thank you so very much for being on the show. Craig Jennings, our guest tonight. Thank you for being with us here on Blog Talk Radio Coach's Corner, and we will be back the following week. Thank you very much. Good night.
Good night. Thanks very much. It was fun being with you.
Thanks.